Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you could share a bit of your personal journey and perhaps some of the biggest challenges you've faced, and a little bit about what you've learned from those, that'd be great.
Sure. So I was born and raised on the south side of Chicago, which is the third largest city here in the United States. I am the oldest of three boys. You can't tell this from looking at me or from my voice, but I'm 6'8" tall, and actually went to college on a basketball scholarship, despite having three knee surgeries when I was in high school. When I graduated from college, I moved home to find a job. I was actually the first person in my family to graduate from college. And I'm really going to date myself now, but this is long before the internet was available to help people find employment. So I move home and I find that first job in the marketing department at the corporate headquarters of Wendy's International, the hamburger chain. That was the good news. The bad news was, as I lived with my parents for the next 3.5 years, as I helped my mother care for my father and my grandmother, who were both dying of different forms of cancer. Professionally, as I said, started out at Wendy's. Then I moved to hospital administration. And then I made a major pivot in my life and became a police officer. I always kind of felt that was my purpose. And one of the things I did during my law enforcement career was I was a SWAT team hostage negotiator. After that, I started a school security consulting business, coached girls' high school basketball, which was a real interesting time in my life. But for the last 11 and a half years, I've been battling this rare form of cancer, this rare form of melanoma that has seen my foot amputated in 2018 and my leg amputated in 2020, right in the middle of the COVID pandemic. And then I guess just my wife and I have been married for 30 years. We have one child, a daughter, who's in the military here in the United States. And I think one of the biggest things I've learned, probably certainly through these 11 years of cancer, but throughout my life, is what I call my four truths. And I'll give them to you. I have them on a post-it note here in my office, and I see them multiple times during the day. So they constantly get reinforced in my mind. The first one is control your mind, or your mind is going to control you. The second one is embrace the pain and the difficulty that we all experience in life and use that pain and difficulty to make you a stronger and more resilient individual. The third one I look at kind of as a legacy type of truth, and it's this: what you leave behind is what you weave in the hearts of other people. And then the fourth one I think is pretty self-explanatory: as long as you don't quit, you can never be defeated. And I refer to those four truths kind of as the bedrock of my soul. I think they're just a good place to start to build a quality life off of.
They're very, very solid foundational truths. Really powerful four there. There's a number of different roads you've taken there, as we all do. And what did the SWAT team hostage negotiation, what was that like, and what did that teach you?
Yeah, so for those of your audience who don't understand how a SWAT team is usually configured, there's usually two groups. There's the tactical officers. Those are the men and women with what we used to call all the toys, the different guns, the armored cars and things like that. And then there were the negotiators. And we used to joke with the tactical team that if we did our job right, they didn't get to use all their toys and things like that. So basically, our job as negotiators was try to develop a relationship with another human being who we've never met and who is probably having the worst day of their life. If you're talking to me and your house is surrounded by the police, you're obviously not having a good day. And I learned a couple things about it. I learned, first of all, I remember when I first started, they gave us a formula, and that formula had to do with how we communicate with each other. And if I can remember the formula, it was 7-38-55. So 7% of the way we communicate with each other are the words that we use. 38% of how we communicate with each other is the tone of voice that we use with those words. And then 55% of how we communicate is our body language or our facial expressions. So as negotiators, we were not with the person. I was not in the room with the person with the gun and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't have the benefit of that 55%. I didn't have the benefit of saying something to an individual and not seeing them kind of roll their eyes like, oh, what an idiot. I can't believe he said that to me. I didn't have that benefit. And there were many times where we would show up on scene and have absolutely no idea why we were there, other than somebody had barricaded themselves or taken hostages and had a gun. And so we had to figure things out, certainly by what people were saying to us, but also by what they weren't saying and how they were saying it. And one of the ways we did that was with what we call tactical empathy. So it would be like, okay, Daniel, help me to understand where you're coming from. Again, the big word there is understand, not agree. I mean, if you were a homicide suspect that just killed three people, I wasn't going to agree that what you did was right, but I wanted to understand where you were coming from, because understanding builds trust. And just like any relationship, husband, wife, parent, child, boss, subordinate, we were trying to build trust with an individual to try to get them out. Another thing we did is we used how and what questions and stayed away from why questions. Because why questions sound accusatory. Why did you do that, Daniel? Oh, wait a minute. Is he accusing me of something? I can get to the same information. Well, what got us to this point, Daniel? That's a much softer way of asking the why are we here question. And so those were some of the things we learned. I mean, I could probably go on for hours about the different techniques and different things that we learned, but it was a great experience. Worked with great people, got great training. We worked with a psychologist. And our training was basically scenario-based. We would do a scenario, and then we would debrief. And you might get, you know, a question from the psychologist that was like, hey, did you ever think this person might have been schizophrenic and off their medication? It's like, oh, gee, I never thought about that. So it was a lot of sort of trial and error, making mistakes in training that hopefully you didn't make when it really counted.
It's really... very high stakes there, and to cut through to that trust in such a short amount of time with the stakes so high, that's quite a skill to develop. And as you say, coming from a place of empathy, but also standing the ground as in, you know, this is not agreeable. That's a really intricate set of variables and circumstances to be in.
It really is. And we never lied to people. So people would say to us, okay, I'll come out, but you've got to promise me I'm not going to go to jail. And we would have to say, well, I'm sorry, when you do come out, you are going to go to jail. And then we would try to deflect the conversation to something that was more pleasant. And the reason we did that was because, and this happened several times, there was a good chance that a year from now or 2 years from now or 5 years from now, we would be right back negotiating with this same person because the underlying cause, let's say it was their mother, you know, their mother was nagging them or griping about something that they were doing. Mom was still alive. Mom was still griping and doing the things she was doing. And that would get you to a point where the person would break and they would take a gun or they would take a hostage or whatever it ended up being. So we didn't lie, because if you felt that 2 years ago when I negotiated with you that I lied to you, then I've lost that trust. You're not going to confide in me. You're not going to help me get you out safely. And so you've got to bring in another negotiator. So that was another huge thing we did. Something else we did is we used, it's called different things. We called it parroting. I think it's called mirroring now, where we would listen to you talk, and then we would mirror or parrot back to you either the most important thing you said or the last two or three words you said, and then we would just go silent because we don't like silence. And that silence would get the person to talk again because... And I'll explain it this way. When we started negotiating with somebody, we've all been to the playground when we were kids and played on a seesaw or a teeter-totter. And when we started negotiating with somebody, usually their emotional brain was way up in the air and their rational brain was way down on the ground. And over time, by asking them these open-ended questions, we got them to burn off a lot of that emotional energy, so that you get that teeter-totter to equilibrium. And then hopefully with more questions and more connections, more empathy, you got to the point where their rational brain was way up in the air and their emotional brain was way down on the ground. Because we all make better decisions for ourselves using our rational brain as opposed to our emotional brain.
Yeah, so you were able to calibrate it as you went. What was the longest... call it a negotiation that you experienced?
Oh my gosh, there were some that were 8, 9, 10 hours that would, and it wasn't, I mean, there were a lot of times where we would try to get people to talk to us. You know, we had a throw phone that had a mile long cord. So we could be a mile away and we could like just throw it up to the door and it's like, and it only connected to us, so you couldn't call out on it or do anything like that. I remember one time, supposedly these three individuals were burglarizing a company that made wire spools, huge wire spools, and they were all stacked up in the yard. And these people were burglarizing the office, and apparently got caught. And so they surrounded it, called in SWAT. And we were trying to get these people to talk to us. But in the meantime, the tactical team had to search each bundle of wire. And there were hundreds and hundreds of these bundles of wire because they were large enough that you could hide in them. You could hide in the middle of them. And that took like 8 hours because, you know, tactically they had to do it safely so that they didn't get hurt if somebody was in there. And the whole thing, we found out later, the people had escaped before we got there. And so, you know, it was 8 hours of basically nothing. Mm. You know, you did it right. You did what you were supposed to do, but you were basically talking to the wind because there was nobody there to talk back to you.
Yeah, well, I imagine no set of circumstances were ever the same. And you literally had to, like, you know, assess the situation very rapidly on any given day. Yeah, it's quite a unique, intense thing to experience. Moving into the basketball coaching, how did that sort of mirror to you your own philosophies and ideas, like these truths you talked about at the start? Did it kind of help solidify your own, you know, if you were going to have to coach these these girls, did it help you really get clear on those sort of philosophies?
It was an incredible learning experience for me. And it was because I have no sisters. And I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, and I went to an all-male military college. So I still remember when my wife and I, when she was pregnant, we went to the OBGYN, and the doctor was like, "Do you want to know what sex the baby is?" And we were like, "Yeah, sure." And I remember she said, "Well, you should buy pink." And I was like, "Oh, no. You need to leave it in there till it's done. I have no idea what to do with a girl." But it was interesting. And I'll give you a story. And this actually occurred. We were playing a game. So there's a game going on, you know, right in front of the bench. And I turned to one of the players on the bench and I motioned for her to go in for another player. And she gives me the affirmative shaking of her head. And I go back to coaching the game. And out of the corner of my eye, I can see the scorer's table and there's nobody there. And so I turn back to her. And again, I pointed to her and I said, "Go in for so-and-so." She gives me the nod of the head and I turn back and I'm coaching the game. And again, out of the corner of my eye, I can see the scorer's table and there's nobody there. And I turn to her a third time and I'm like, I was kind of mad. It's like, get in the game. Now she's shaking me off like a, you know, a major league pitcher in baseball, you know, with their catcher. They don't like the sign. It's like, no, I'm not going. I'm like, "What? You're not going into the game?" I'm like, "What? Are you kidding me?" So I bring her to me. I've got my hands on her shoulders. Now, Daniel, keep in mind, there's a basketball game going on like right in front of us, you know, back and forth and that. And I put my hands on her shoulders and I'm like, "I need you in the game. What's wrong?" All of a sudden, the tears start down the cheeks. And I'm like, "Oh my God, are you kidding me? Are we going to have a counseling session right here in the middle of a high school basketball game?" She said, "Coach, I don't want to play." And I said, "Well, first of all, there are no uniform wearers on this team. You just don't get to put on a uniform." I said, "You come every day to practice. You work hard. You make your teammates and yourself better. Why don't you want to play?" She said, "Because my friends are in the stands. And if I make a mistake, they're going to laugh at me." Mm-hmm. And I got that. But I said to her, "What about your responsibility to your teammates, to, you know, to the girls that you come out here every day and play hard and work hard with? What about your responsibility to them?" And so over a few minutes, I got her to see that, hey, you got a responsibility to your teammates as well as to your friends in the stands. And I got her to go into the game. But Daniel, I mean, as a guy growing up, you couldn't wait to get into the game. I mean, it didn't matter how good you were, how terrible you were. You just wanted to be in the game. And for these girls, it was just different. Girls seem, I'm going to make a huge generalization here, so nobody write your show or anything like that. Girls seem to play for a different reason than boys. Yes, they want to win, but it's more about having fun and developing relationships with their teammates. Whereas guys are like, "Look, I just want to play. I don't care if I'm close to you. I don't care if we're tight or anything like that. I just want to get in the game and play." So it was just different for me. And, you know, I was in my 40s when I, you know, my late 40s when I was doing this. And I had never experienced anything like what I did, just based on the example that I told you about somebody not wanting to play in the game. Mm.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But it's awesome in that moment that you were able to reframe it rather than just like being reactive, but, you know, to reframe, well, there's those people up there, but there's, you know, how about kind of letting the team down, right. weigh it up, you know, weigh right. it up in that. It's perhaps the hostage negotiation stuff prepped you a little bit for those heated moments on the basketball court.
Yeah, really. We're having a negotiation right here in the middle of a basketball game.
And so you've written a book, and I really love one of the words in the title, which is sustainable. If you can introduce the book first and foremost, but I really like this word sustainable, because it's, you know, there's kind of more than, you know, trying to achieve something or whatever is great, but how do we sustain things? So I really like that, but please introduce it firsthand.
Sure. So the book is called Sustainable Excellence, the 10 Principles to Leading Your Uncommon and Extraordinary Life. And it was really, for me, it was a book born out of two conversations I had. One was with a former player that I had coached in high school, who had moved with her fiance to the area in Colorado where my wife and I live now. And the four of us had dinner one night. And I remember saying to her after dinner that I was excited that she was living close and I could watch her find and live her purpose. And she got real quiet for a while. And then she looked at me and she said, "Well, coach, what do you think my purpose is?" I said, "I have absolutely no idea what your purpose is, but that's what your life should be about. Finding the reason you were put on the face of this earth, using your unique gifts and talents and living that reason." So that was one conversation. And then I had a young man reach out to me on social media from college. And he said, "You know, what do you think are the most important things I should learn, not to just be successful in my job or in business, but to be successful in life?" And Daniel, I didn't want to give him the, you know, get up early, work hard, help others. I didn't want to give him sort of the cliches that we all know. I wanted to see if I could potentially go deeper with him. So I spent some time taking notes and that, and sort of had these 10 ideas, these 10 thoughts, these 10 principles. And so I sent them to him. And then I stepped back and I was like, well, I got a life story that fits underneath that principle, or I know somebody whose life emulates this principle. So literally during the 3 to 4 month period where I was healing after I had my leg amputated, I sat down at the computer every day and I built stories, and they're real stories about real people underneath each of the principles. And that's how sustainable excellence came to be.
So the 10 principles really provided a framework and a structure for the whole thing. How different do the 10 principles vary to the four truths that you mentioned, or are they relative?
They're different. The four truths are not in this book. I'm writing another book that will include them. So some of the ideas around them that kind of back them up are included in the first book, but I go much more in depth with the four truths in the second book, and the principles are just a little bit different.
Yeah. Yep. No, cool. And people can find that.
Yeah. You can get Sustainable Excellence anywhere. You can get a book online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple iBooks, wherever you can get a book online, you can get Sustainable Excellence.
Yeah. And the cancer battle you've had, it sounds extraordinarily relentless on you. What did that sort of teach you, and the loss of the leg?
Yeah, it has been. I mean, I have this rare form of melanoma, and most people think of melanoma as too much exposure to the sun, and it affects the melan, the pigment in our skin. I have a rare form of melanoma that has nothing to do with sun exposure. It appears on the bottom of the feet or the palms of the hands. And just for educational purpose, there's another form of melanoma called ocular melanoma, which appears in your eye. And there's a form that basically appears in your mucous membranes, so in your nose or your mouth, and it's still melanoma. And so mine is the kind, it's called acralentiginous, and it appeared on the bottom of my foot when I was coaching high school basketball. I had a callus break open, and I didn't think much of it, because as a coach, you're on your feet a lot. But after a few weeks of it not healing, I went to see a podiatrist, a foot doctor friend of mine. And he took an x-ray and he said, Terry, I think you have a cyst in there and I can cut it out. And he did. Nothing that gave either one of us concern. But fortunately or unfortunately, he sent it off to pathology to have it looked at. And then 2 weeks later, I get the call from him. And as I said, he was a friend of mine. And the more difficulty he was having explaining to me what was going on, the more frightened I was becoming until finally he just laid it out for me. He said, Terry, I've been a doctor for 25 years, and I have never seen the form of cancer that you have. And talk about, you know, being afraid, being scared. And when I was diagnosed with melanoma in 2012, they told me it was a death sentence. They said, we have nothing other than surgery to offer you. So if your cancer is somewhere where we cannot cut it out, we've got nothing. We've got nothing for you. And so, you know, I was given a death sentence and I thought, one thing the doctors don't know, they don't know my heart. They don't know my mind. They don't know my soul. You know, they don't know that I want to see my daughter graduate from high school and I want to see her graduate from college and I want to walk her down the aisle. They don't know that. And so they, you know, they play the odds and they give you the, well, you'll be dead in 2 years. Okay. Well, it's 11 and a half years now. I'm still not dead. And I mean, certainly that part of that is on me, but I think part of that is also my faith and the fact that I don't think God's done with me yet. So it's been hell. I think of the Winston Churchill quote, you know, the Prime Minister of Great Britain during World War II, who said, if you're going through hell, keep going. And that's what I've tried to do for these last 11 and a half years.
Yeah, well, all power to you, like, to, you know, to see the way that you present yourself and hold yourself and sharing, you know, helping others is remarkable. So, it's a tradition on the show to have guests offer some sort of challenge to the listeners, given their personal journey and their experiences. Not talking anything grandiose, like jumping out of a plane, because it's really about the little things that, you know, make differences. Does anything come to mind that you might suggest?
I do. I have something. And actually, I try to do this every day of my life. And it kind of goes back to the four truths that we were talking about a minute ago. You know, how do you embrace pain? How do you embrace the difficulty that we all experience in life? And again, this doesn't have to be, you know, anything related to cancer or even an illness. I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, you break up with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, or the plane you're leaving on to go on vacation gets canceled, or, you know, you don't get the promotion at work that you believe you deserve. Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. So how do you deal with that pain? And here's the challenge I would offer to everybody. And I try to do this every single day of my life. Do one thing every day that scares you, that makes you nervous, that makes you uncomfortable, that's potentially embarrassing. Like I said, it doesn't have to be a big thing. But if you do those small things every day, when the big disasters in life hit us, and they hit all of us, we, you know, lose somebody who's close to us, we get let go from our job, we find out we have a chronic or a terminal illness, you'll be so much more resilient to handle that pain when it presents itself. So just do one thing every day that you don't want to do that makes you scared, nervous, or uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's an awesome one. And doesn't even have to be anything too, like, too overwhelming, just something that little bit of discomfort there, step toward it. And then there's like there's kind of an interest that builds on that, you know, like a muscle. As you say, and that can help equip you for those bigger obstacles that might come down the line. Where can people find you?
So I have a blog. It's called Motivational Check. Every day I put up a thought for the day. With that thought usually comes a question about how maybe you can incorporate it into your life. On Mondays, I put up the Monday morning motivational message. I have recommendations for books to read, videos to watch. You can get access to my social media accounts. You can leave me a message. That's all at motivationalcheck.com.
Cool. Well, it's really short, but a lot of gems in there. And I really appreciate your time and your positivity and the work that you're doing. So thank you so much.
Well, Daniel, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed talking with you today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.